It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's a tough day for Pittsburgh sports fans. Let's face it, we're dealing with some disappointment here of an abrupt ending to one of the best Pirate seasons in the history of the team. Well, we do have something that just might cheer you up. It's the story of a relationship between a former athlete turned newspaper man and a storied football team synonymous with failure. That was at one time. The newspaper man was Bill Nunn Jr., managing editor of the Pittsburgh Courier. The football team was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who hadn't won much of anything when they hired Nunn as a part-time scout in 1967. What they didn't realize at the time was how much they needed one another, with the Steelers perhaps needing Nunn more than he needed them. Nunn was made a full-time scout a year later, and by 1970 had been promoted to assistant director of player personnel, the first African-American appointed to a front office position with the Steelers. It's hard to imagine the Steelers enjoying all of the success that was to follow without Bill Nunn Jr. Tribune Review reporter Andrew Conti has chronicled this story in his new book, The Color of Sundays, The Strategy That Built the Steelers Dynasty. Andrew Conti joins us now in studio. Andy, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me back.
When he died last year, Bill Nunn Jr. was still working as a part-time scout for the Steelers at age 89, long after he had, quote-unquote, retired. When did you approach him about writing a book about him, and how did he respond?
We started talking about 3 years before that, 2.5, 3 years before that. And when I couldn't even get him to respond to me. I wrote him a handwritten note. I reached out to him. I left all these phone messages for him. And so I finally went to Kevin Colbert, the general manager, and I went to Dan Rooney, the chairman, who was the ambassador in Ireland at that point, and told them what I wanted to do. And they both said, oh, that's a great idea. It's a phenomenal story. So they both kind of leaned on Nunn a little bit. And so finally he agreed to meet with me. And then when he did, I said, well, I told him what I wanted to do. And he was like, you're not doing a story on me. You're not doing this. You know, I don't want the attention, basically.
Why? Why?
His thing was that he wanted to make sure that I saw the full picture, the full story, that it wasn't just him alone, that there were all these other people who had come before him and people who stood with him and people who had come after him, and that he hoped it would go into the future, that this was a story not just about, you know, one man and the Steelers, but about all of these black athletes who had been overlooked because of the color of their skin. And, you know, that there was a lot of work that went into getting to the point where we are today, where there's, you know, equality in sports, and where, you know, players are judged on their ability and their value rather than how they look.
So you got his blessing by basically looking into the whole story, looking into what his father had done, the integral part he played in making the Pittsburgh Courier this national entity of news that was not only important to African Americans, but really anybody that wanted to understand some of the underreported issues of the day.
Right. For the Courier, it's hard for Pittsburghers to understand today just how important that newspaper was, not just here, but all across the country. They had something like 14 editions, you know, Seattle, Los Angeles, Miami, all these cities where they had reporters there. And it was the Pittsburgh Courier, but it was the voice for black Americans at that time. And so if you lived in a rural community outside of a big urban area and you were black, this is how you got your news. You had to wait for the newspaper to actually show up. They would send it out by, you know, Pullman rail car. The guys would throw it off, and church ministers and community leaders would stand at certain intersections waiting for that week's Courier to arrive.
And the Courier was also celebrating the accomplishments of black Americans that simply were not being documented as well as they should have been. There was some catch-up later, but as a lot of things were happening, for example, in sports, the Courier was in the process of naming the first black college All-America team in 1925. And in segregated professional sports leagues, recognizing athletes in a way that other publications weren't. So how important was this to contributing to Bill Nunn Jr.'s knowledge base and his connections to great athletes, especially football players?
Yeah, so it was everything. I mean, he grew up in this environment. His father was the managing editor of the newspaper. His father had been the one who came up with the idea for this Black College All-America list of the best football players. Then Nunn goes off and, you know, he goes to school, and when he graduates, he decides he wants to be a newspaper reporter. And that becomes his job then. His job every fall is to travel the country. He's putting like 10,000 to 15,000 miles on every year to go and see as many black college football games as he can, see as many athletes as he can, and then sit down at the end of the season and come up with this list of here are the best players. And you got to remember, this was at a time when for a lot of these players, this was the height of their career, was getting on the Courier list. if you couldn't dream of playing in the NFL, the most you could hope for was that, you know, Bill Nunn and the Courier would show up at your small black college, you'd have an outstanding game, you'd leave some lasting impact, and Bill would maybe perhaps add you to his list at the end of the season.
But Bill Nunn Jr. was, there's more to this story because, as you document in the book, he, before he started working as a sports writer at the Courier, he had choices to do other things, and one of them was to be a professional athlete. He attended West Virginia State University, and in his senior year as a point guard, he led the basketball team to a 26-0 senior season in 1948. They were the only undefeated team in America, and he has a chance to go and play pro basketball. What happened?
Yeah, so their story in college was amazing. West Virginia State, and Nunn had this ability where he sort of had that Forrest Gump quality about him where he turns up at important moments. One of his teammates is Earl Lloyd, who ends up being the first black to play in the NBA. And these guys just, they put it together. They had an amazing season. And at the end of the season, Nunn had, he had several opportunities. The New York Knicks offered him a chance to try out. And this was 2 years before there were any blacks in the league. And he also had an offer to go be a Harlem Globetrotter. And he had a third offer to be an assistant basketball coach at West Virginia State. And he turned them all down because he thought that being a reporter would bring him more stability, but also more fame and more money, which is hard to believe.
Yeah, it's incredible you think of that in, if that happened today, if somebody had a chance to play in a professional sports league, I think we know what the decision would be. We're talking about the color of Sundays, the secret strategy that built the Steelers dynasty, a remarkable book put together by our colleague and Tribune Review reporter, Andrew Conte. Bill Nunn Jr., okay, so he makes the decision, I want to be a sports writer. And he ends up writing about more than just sports. But let's talk about some of the stories he covered as a sports writer. No small thing at all, considering that he was starting at the Courier at about the same time Jackie Robinson and other black players were breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball. Bill Nunn Jr., though, had to cover these events from the stands. He had to buy a ticket to get in. He couldn't sit in the press box. What was going on with that?
People will remember people who've seen the movie 42, where Wendell Smith, the reporter there, has to sit in the stands. And because he's not allowed to sit in the press box. It's an all-white press box. The Baseball Writers Association of Pittsburgh at that time said, we had to work for a daily newspaper. Well, Nunn worked for a weekly newspaper. That was their way of getting around the race issue. And so he wasn't allowed to sit there. And, yeah, he had this amazing ability to get some of these stories. And so he was there. The first time Jackie Robinson got thrown out of a game was at Forbes Field in Pittsburgh. And he didn't get thrown out over anything related to race. It was a baseball thing. And he got thrown out of the game for arguing with the umpire. And Nunn was able to wait outside for him. He waited outside the stadium. And when Jackie Robinson came out, then Nunn got the exclusive interview. It was the kind of thing that...
And he has to wait outside the stadium. He can't go in...
Not even in the locker room, right. Yeah, he had to wait outside the stadium.
And the irony of all this is that Jackie Robinson got thrown out of the game for defending a white player whom the umpire thought had said something, and it was actually a fan yelling from the stands.
Right. Yeah, this was the second season that Robinson was playing, and by that point, people were starting finally to look at him more as a baseball player than as, you know, a black baseball player. And, yeah, it was a baseball thing. Nunn was also there after Game 7 of the 1960 World Series when, the Pirates won, and he goes into the locker room. By that point, he's allowed to go in.
He fought for the right to be in the press box, and eventually
he was the first black reporter to sit in the press box, right, at Forbes Field. And then after that game, he goes in and he sees Clemente in the locker room, and they have an interesting exchange as well, because Clemente he didn't think of himself as black until he came to North America, and he thought of himself as Puerto Rican, and then people here in the States and in Canada were telling him, no, you're black, and then he would open up his mouth and he's like, the blacks would be like, no, well, you're not black because you don't speak English, so he was one of those first pioneers for Latin American players.
And Bill Nunn Jr. Certainly covered a lot in terms of baseball, but he really loved football. And there's a passage you quote from him in your book, and this tells you a bit about how he feels about the game, particularly the college game, which years ago was bigger than pro football. College football was numero uno, maybe next to baseball. And this gives you an idea of some of Bill Nunn Jr.'s writing. He says, as the golden leaves of autumn begin their eastward flight back to the soil from which they came. The sounds of clashing helmets, bone-crushing tackles, and nerve-defying blocks begin to penetrate the air. He really had the gift of being a great writer, but he also had a great... This tells you what the feel he had for the game, the importance of it, and what it meant to him.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's what made him a great scout later on, too, was that he had a feel that went beyond the numbers. You know, it wasn't just watching these guys and seeing how high they could jump or how fast they could run. He could sort of look into their sports soul, their football soul, and say, oh, this guy's got the potential to be something and to do something more than just the numbers when they show.
So how do Bill Nunn Jr. and the Steelers finally get together? Where did the idea come from to hire a newspaper man to scout college players for the Steelers?
Yeah, it's funny because so Nunn is having this – he has been putting out the All-America list in the newspaper for years, and then he starts holding a banquet in Pittsburgh at the Hilton downtown where he brings in all these great black college football players from across the country, and he needs money, and so he gets the Rooneys to help sponsor the event. And so the Rooneys are sitting there at a table, and they're thinking, you know, our team is mediocre at best. They'd made the playoffs one time and lost at that point. Our team is mediocre, and why don't we know about any of these black college football players? Why don't we know them? And so it was Dan Rooney, who's now the chairman of the Steelers and who was the ambassador to Ireland, who said, you know, we should hire Bill Nunn. And so he called Nunn up and said, will you come down to the Roosevelt Hotel, which is downtown across from Heinz Hall? Will you meet with us? And so Nunn came down and met with him, and Dan said, you know, come. We would love for you to come to work. And Nunn was like, not interested. Don't want to do it. You know, and it was because of all the old resentments. You know, it was... You know, you didn't have blacks on the team. You didn't let black reporters sit in the press box. You didn't look at my list that I've been putting out all these years. You know, you never asked about any of these players before. Why should I trust that now you're interested? But the more they talked, and it ultimately came around to Art Rooney Jr. and Nunn as well, the more the three of them talked, they came to a realization that if they could start to access this pool of talent that nobody else was looking at, well, that would give him a great advantage. And there was a funny line in there where Art Rooney Jr. says to Bill Nunn, well, I think prejudice is a great thing. And you just imagine, like, Nunn's just, like, you know, his jaw dropping. And like, what do you mean? Well, if everyone else remains prejudiced and we don't, then that's a real advantage.
And were the Steelers, I mean, did they deserve to be taken to task for past practices? Were they at one time what someone could have considered a racist organization?
No, I don't think so. The very first team, certainly Art Rooney Sr. was not. He did a lot in the Hill District. He had a lot of interaction with blacks in Pittsburgh. The first team that he had one of the only league's black players on it, Ray Kemp, in 1933. And then after that, it was during the Great Depression, and all of the teams they got rid of their black players. And I asked Dan Rooney about that. I said, you know, was it intentional? And he said, I don't really know. It was because he was just a kid at that point. He's like, I don't know. I don't think so. And in my research and looking at it, certainly there were owners that had a predilection to keeping blacks out of the game. And I think at that point in the Great Depression, it was a point where they just weren't there. But what happens is then during the Second World War, you start seeing, because of the shortage of men, everybody's off fighting, the men who are back here, they start playing together. And so you're getting blacks and whites together for football, for baseball, for all these sports, so that after the war, Americans are like, we want to see the best athletes. We don't care the color of their skin. We want, you know, show us the best athletes you can put together for your teams. And that's really what breaks it. That, and then the owners start to realize they can make money by playing these black players who are really talented because people want to see them.
And who did Bill Nunn Jr. help the Steelers find? It's a pretty long list.
So. It is a long list, yeah. So, I mean, the most famous, is John Stallworth, but also Elsie Greenwood, Mel Blunt. I like some of the undrafted free agents, Glenn Edwards, Sam Davis, Donnie Schell. Those three guys all were undrafted, and they all won 4 Super Bowl rings, and it's because, you know, Nunn was able to find them at a time when really nobody else was looking at those guys. Those guys would have fallen through the cracks without him saying, hey, let's take a closer look at him.
I love the story about Stallworth when he's scouting him. He's with a bunch of other NFL scouts, and they're having Stallworth run the 40, and everybody's kind of not really impressed, and Bill Nunn just kind of pulls one over on them.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, Stallworth was a great interview, too, because, you know, I went into a thing, here's this guy, he's a Hall of Famer, right? I mean, you think of him as being who he is today. But he really allowed himself to go back in his mind to being insecure and trying out that first day. And so, yeah, Stallworth runs the 40. He comes up slow. Everybody looks at him. They're disappointed in the run that he had because the grass was wet and he wasn't feeling well. And so as all the scouts were leaving to the parking lot, Nunn starts coughing. He's like, oh, I don't feel well, and I'm going to stay behind. And so he comes back, and he ends up going back to Stallworth and having him run again, and that's when they find out how great he is. So
that's a great, brilliant maneuver. So would the Steelers have won 6 Super Bowls without Bill Nunn Jr.? And he had 6 rings.
He did have 6 rings. He was one of the few people who do. And certainly the first 4, I think you can make a strong case that they would not have won without him. He was really the linchpin. But I think his legacy also is carried through with the way they hired Mike Tomlin and that the way blacks have advanced.
The Rooney Rule.
The Rooney Rule, right. And now the Rooney Rule is being extended to more of the front office. So he's had a major lasting impact, and it's one that I think will continue to grow.
The book is The Color of Sundays, The Secret Strategy That Built the Steelers Dynasty. The author is my guest, Andrew Conti. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. I enjoyed the book. It's a great read.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.